Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, predecided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. But if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, we thank you so very much for that disclaimer and sharing with us the other great things that we offer here at Your Remedy is in the Law. We have a first-time caller from Shawano, Wisconsin, ending in 9127. May I please trouble you for your first name only and tell us how you heard about us?
Johnny Ringel.
Oh, okay. No, I know how you heard about us. All right. Incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, one second. Let me finish writing this. Every time he calls in on a different number, I've got to record it so I have it. Anyways, Johnny Ringo is probably one of the finest investigators, researchers there are. He was the head researcher for the late Tony Davis, and we owe a lot to him. Particularly for his efforts with regards to Title 18 of the United States Code. And he could go on for probably hours and hours and days sharing with you what the problems are with that. Good to see you again, Johnny, Ringo, and glad that you're here. All right, so starting off on my side of the fence, did you know that there are two sides of the law? There's the public side, which is the one that you most likely interface with, which subjects you to federal mandates, incessant regulations, fines, fees, penalties, jail, even death. The private side is available to everyone and provides an escape from the public law. However, nobody will talk about it because it's deemed a threat to the system. The mafia, after all, does not like competition. Okay, here's a little tidbit for you to ponder. A license or permit is a limited permission to do that which is otherwise illegal. Did you understand that? A license or permit is a limited permission to do that which is otherwise illegal. So here's some questions. Number one, when did it become illegal to get married? Why do you need a marriage license? When did it become illegal to repair your home? Don't you need a permit for zoning or whatever to do repairs on your home? And why do I need to pay someone else for their permission to manage my own affairs on my own property? Well, we Americans don't get rights from the Constitution, as so many people mistakenly say and believe. The Constitution was created to protect our naturally endowed God-given rights and to bind down the hands of mischievous men in power so that they could not infringe upon those rights that are bestowed upon us by our Creator. So the last question of the day is simply, so then why are our servants and representatives ignoring these limitations and creating civil strife against the people, their masters, with constant harassment and police powers? The answer is clear as black and white, and you'd be surprised. It's not them that are in error. It's you. Let me set up a scenario so you can understand this a little bit better. Let's say I have a small private island out in the middle of the ocean, and I want to do some business, but there obviously there are no customers. Now, I see a cruise ship going by every day, and I would like for those people to be my customers, not just for a day visit, but forever. So to get the men interested, I offer plenty of cute island girls, you know, to dance around with and free beer. And to get the woman interested, I offer free spa and beauty treatments and unlimited free shoes of all kinds. So word gets out. And the cruise clients demand that the ship stop along this way, which it soon does, to keep their cruise business going and their customers happy. As people enter the island, we have immigration checkpoints, of course. To get on the island, have everyone sign a contract, which basically says that they give up their all their natural rights at the shoreline. And on this island, they must abide by all commercial regulations on the island. And when the people leave the island, the terms of the contract say that this person must abide by the same rules henceforth wherever they go. Now, of course, law doesn't normally work this way, as there are jurisdictional issues. To get around this, I know that they can't control John Smith, that's spelled uppercase J, lowercase O-H-N, uppercase S, lowercase M-I-T-H, when it comes to their time to go back home to Kentucky or wherever they're from. So I'll get this John Smith to admit that he is John Smith, all uppercase, which by operation of law is another legal person. And as long as John Smith of the upper and lowercase thinks that he's John Smith, all uppercase, he'll have to send me money whenever I send John Smith a bill because it's a contract that he agreed to sign. The people don't care, and they don't understand any way at the first place. They just want island girls, free beer, and free shoes. And they go, yeah, whatever. And they sign the contract to get on the island to get the benefits. Knowing that, quote, no law can abrogate the rights of a contract, end quote, I'm feeling pretty good that I'm getting shiploads of new customers every day who are committing themselves to me to a life by way of contract. My fees, my taxes, and other businesses that I take, I take in, it more than pays for the beer and the shoes that I give away. And now with this business model, I can show investors a steady stream of income and new customers. And with my accounting books and cash flow, I can now borrow huge amounts of money to build my empire, enforce my contracts, and grow. My little island business is a huge success. So then, in reality, my little island business is only 10 miles square in area, and is surrounded by Virginia and Maryland. Yeah, you guessed it. I'm talking about the United States government. United States, all uppercase. Which is not to be confused with the Republic of the United States of America. United, all lowercase, it's an adjective. States of America being the actual organization, uppercase and lowercase. It's spelled this way with a small u because the word united, as I said, is an adjective and not part of the name. And it describes the noun, which is the governmental unit for the states of America, which are the supreme on the private side of law. This is not so small and very important distinction. The Republic is the de jure or lawful government where the private side of the law, that is your God-given rights and constitutional limitations on government, are in full operation. On the other hand, the United States, all uppercase, it's a corporate entity governed by corporate bylaws, that is legislation for its corporate members and all those who volunteer into its jurisdiction by way of contract. Now, in the old days of this republic, when babies were born, the permanent record of birth was made in the family Bible. The name listed was in upper and lower case, and it was witnessed by those present for authentication. Under this new system, people apply for a birth certificate, which creates our legal jurisperson, all uppercase, John Smith. In the place of the upper and lower case John Smith, and immediately, as a baby, there are two people born. The living, breathing people, if you would, and the fictitious trust entity, i.e. a legal person, which will serve my island business. Now, since 1933, when House Joint Resolution 192 removed lawful money from circulation and there was no more money to pay for things, that is, gold or silver, a whole new system emerged. And at that time, the medium of exchange became credit, or promises to pay. We know these as Federal Reserve notes. All we get are promises to pay, which never get paid, at law anyways. And so by operation of law, this benefit, which is the privilege of discharging your debts, your liabilities, you're not actually paying for it at law, it brings us under the purview of the laws of commerce in all that we do. Commerce, of course, is regulated. The United States, all uppercase, then makes everything a commercial activity for all uppercase John Smith, which allows it to regulate John Smith from cradle to grave. And this all uppercase John Smith pays fees and registrations and fines and taxes and incurs potential criminal penalties if he doesn't or she doesn't follow the corporate bylaws, that is, the federal regs. So now we're starting to see the lines of distinction between the private side of law and the public side of law. And so now let's go back to the benefits. Well, they tell us, quote, you need the birth certificate in order to enroll your child in school and to get a job and to enroll in Social Security and so on and so forth. Well, before you know it, you have so many of these adhesion contracts, they're non-negotiable, with this island business, you now have become completely wrapped up and can never claim your almighty one's given rights because they are superseded by a voluntary agreement when you applied for benefits and entered into a contract with the United States. That's all uppercase United States. That is why the Constitution no longer applies to most people. And just like Esau, you remember Jacob and Esau, the twins, the fraternal twins? Esau gave up his inheritance as birthright for a bowl of porridge in the book of Genesis. Most of us have done the very same thing. Nearly all courts in the United States are courts of admiralty jurisdiction. They are administrative tribunals administering the bankruptcy of the all uppercase United States, which was bankrupt since they removed the lawful money in H.J.R. 192. The courts are there only to administer the contract under bankruptcy laws, and they are not there to protect your rights. They have no jurisdiction or authority over that. It's not that the judge is bad. He or she is only following the rules of the court in admiralty. So if you demand constitutional rights in a contract court of admiralty, then you are the one who is out of order. Now, we've only scratched the surface on this, but I hope you've gotten the idea here. Everyone should understand this and what the remedies are. Demanding rights and putting hope in the political process are folly and a complete waste of time on the national level, at least, until you and your sheriff understand the operation of law and whether you are on the public side or the private side. So let me turn the call over to PJ. And what you're going to learn and understand from PJ is that there are remedies. He's been part of a team that has been fighting this headlong for nearly 30 years. And we have a new tool in our arsenal. It's called correcting your status. It is a way where the wrong side of the law, the island law, if you would, recognizes your substantive due process rights. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to PJ. Go ahead, buddy.
Thank you. Sorry I was a little late. I was on a conference call there, right? And I realized, oh my goodness, I better get to that call. So I missed a lot of your introduction there. I did hear much of it about the 10-mile square area and their desire to do business with you and not inform you of the full contract, things like that. It's quite interesting. Before 1913, most money was substantive. It was backed by gold and silver. And you couldn't get cheated by somebody that reproduced gold and silver for nothing. Well, you had to go out and buy it or mine it. that's been changed. The money that is in circulation now in most of the world is not backed by gold or silver. And you're not forced to use this script money, but it's very convenient. And people try to do business with just gold and silver at once. If you're not set up right, it's quite difficult. It used to be easy because everywhere you go, they go, I'll take the gold and silver, and I'll give you this much for it, and this many hamburgers, this many cattle, whatever. And they were ready to do business that way. But nowadays, you pull out a gold coin or a silver coin, and they look at you like, well, what do you want me to do with that? But the thing about the Federal Reserve note is when the Federal Reserve Act was passed, in the act, it said for military necessity. That's what it said. And now the people that pushed the Federal Reserve note, they knew that they could scrub that out of it. They could scrub the military necessity out of it. They've done it all over the world in various ways, especially in America. I think that was the third time the Federal Reserve System was introduced into America. It was introduced a couple times before that, and there was enough wisdom in Congress and the people to stop it because they knew the destruction of such. The Federal Reserve System is likened to 10 people go onto an island, and that is the commerce of that island. And one guy steps forward and he says, hey, I'll make it easier for you guys to exchange wealth with these Federal Reserve notes. And people go, okay. So they get into it and, hey, man, I can give $10 and I can get these fish and I don't have to carry my corn over there. I just give them the Federal Reserve note. And they backwards, we don't have to carry our grain products anymore. We don't have to carry our livestock. We just go to town and pay for it. But little did they know that whenever that guy wanted something, he just goes back in his back room and just prints out extra Federal Reserve notes and has the same buying power that they have out in the community. But the difference is he didn't raise any cattle. He didn't raise any corn. He didn't do anything except spin the handle on his printing press. And it's wrong. It's biblically wrong. It's insane to join a system like that. It's absolutely insane. And American people are in an insane situation here. It is stupid. Now, people that borrow a huge amount of money, which is generally the wealthy people, they love this system because they know they can pay $100,000 for a house. It's going to be difficult to make payments for the first 10 years, but it's going to be really easy the last 20 years because they know. They know how the system works. It's going to be inflated. I'll only have to do half the work during the day, during the month to make payments. So while the average person might buy one house, if he's lucky, whereas the wealthy person has bought 100 houses or 1,000 houses, or some of these corporations got 100,000 houses, and they're taking advantage of the inflation, and it's robbing society blind. It's creating an environment to where the husband and the wife have to go to work to make ends meet in much of the country. And it's just bad. And the churches all over the country should get together and communicate this to their congregations so that they can stand up against it and get back to substantive money. So that's the fiat money coming into a system is basically a curse. It's a curse of a nation. And because a godly nation will not allow it. It's only a nation that's left God behind, because he clearly communicates in the scriptures not to do that. Now, as far as the government, we always say the government. They're not the government. The government is a person, and his name is we call him God. Michael probably has the proper pronunciation for that name. But he's the creator of the universe. He is the government. And the United States is not the government. It's a government. It governs certain things. But I don't know why we decided to call it the government. It's kind of crazy because there's church government, there's family government. You govern yourself. There's community governance, there's society governance, there's common law governance. The United States is supposed to be last on that list, not first. But anyway, people just, when you say the government, they're referring to the United States, and it's a misconception. That particular organization is a military purpose, and it supposed to have very little influence in our life, and constitutionally it does. What they've done is tricked people into entering their system in ignorance, and now they're taking 15 to 25% of their wealth away from them every year. So you're not a full-fledged slave because they don't take 100% of it away from you. They're only taking 10, 15, 20% of it away from you, sometimes 50%. But it's a form of theft because they're not entitled to it. It's through deception. Now, if you live on government land and they give you a contract to whatever you produce off this land, you got to give us a third. That's contractually, but most people in America do not live on government land. They have no business contract with the United States that has full disclosure. And the one they do have is not a contract because it doesn't have full disclosure. What I've learned over the last 30 years that Michael talked about, me being involved in law, it's probably been 35 years, but it's been a long time, and the accumulative years for the people I work with is literally thousands of years. You know, you get 100 people together, and every one of them's got 30 years of experience dealing with this stuff. It's a lot of compiled knowledge. What we have is a organization. It's called the United States. It's basically an entity, and that entity pays big dollars to people to keep the lower people in line. They pay big dollars to the federal judges. And those federal judges, they are instructed to make sure that none of the fish get out of the net. They want to bring them in every year and confiscate the theft of their proceeds. It's unbiblical. It's evil. And we recently conversed with a judge that not recently, but this year. And that judge, after reading the material on proper application of federal taxes, came to us and said that they were so they felt so bad for the last, I'm just going to say a number, it was a big number, for the last 20 years, that person has been throwing people in jail for not paying taxes. And after that person read the information that we provided, which is pretty simplistic and on point and absolutely provable, that person, that federal judge, realized that she's been putting innocent people in jail for 20-some years. And that person said that, I'm going to resign from my job. I can't live with myself. And we encourage that person to stay in office, stay there as a federal judge, and do some good before you get maybe pushed out of your office. If a federal judge or even any U.S. judge, especially the higher level district judges in the state, If they start communicating the truth to the people, the other judges will systematically have them removed. We've dealt with judges that started doing that, and women came forward and accused them of, trying to rape them or whatever, I can't remember the word, improper conduct toward them, sexual harassment. And, none of this happened. No, not even a peep of it until they started sharing with the community and in their cases the truth of law. And all of a sudden they're getting attacked in such a way that they're going to lose their office of being a judge. And it's organized. That's what they do. There was a case in Minnesota where a judge revealed in the case that the Federal Reserve System is corrupt. They do not have a bank does not have the right to collect any interest on Federal Reserve notes. And that judge, who one of my close friends and business partners in law, at least he practiced studying law in his entire life, because we were learning that it's pretty dangerous to say the word lawyer and stuff like that. So I'm trying to avoid. I got to change my vocabulary on that. But his vocation was helping people understanding the proper application of written law and the Bill of Rights. But anyway, that judge ruled against the bank, and he was several months after the case, he was found dead. He was an expert fisherman. He spent his life on the water on his free times, and he went out fishing one day, and they found him dead. Probably another boat waved him over for help and pretended their motor quit, and like a good Christian man, he went over there and helped him. And they probably grabbed his neck and pushed him under the water until he drowned, and they drove off. And a few months later, my friend is a friend of this family. He called the kids up, who were all grown, and they said they went to pick up Mom, and the house was locked. Mom's purse was on the table. The keys were laying right there to the house. Everything was in order. Nothing disturbed. And they never did find her body. So the bankers sent a message to the judges, don't mess with us. This will happen to you. So that message went to every judge in America. This is what will happen to you if you expose the truth of the Federal Reserve note. He basically made a ruling that you can require the principal to be brought back, but not the interest because of the fraud of the bank. And he believed that it was not proper to leave those Federal Reserves out into circulation, but the bank had no right to interest. And basically what these banks are supposed to do when they create, at least in the corrupt system, when they create fiat money using the computer, you go in there and you sign a promissory note. There's no money in the bank. No money. No credits, no paper money, no nothing. And you hand them a promissory note, they push a button, and they print out a check, and they hand it to you. And the check is for $100,000. And you take that down, and you pay off the Home Depot to build your house. Anyway, that money goes into circulation, and then you got to come back and pay it back. So let's just say, hypothetically, a month later, you got the money together, and you went back and paid it back. They're supposed to take that $100,000 back and not put it back into circulation. They're supposed to cancel it out. And then they get to keep the interest. So the interest would create more circulation into society, because that would not disappear. That would continue to circulate. At least at the very minimum, sit in their bank vault. And you could do anything with it. You go out and buy gold with it, or leave it in your bank vault, but it would be there, the interest on it. But that bank said, you got to pay the interest. I mean, you got to pay the principal back so they can cancel it out and take it out of society, so it doesn't create any undue inflation. But they're not entitled to interest. And they killed him. They killed him, and they killed his wife. And like I said, they found him floating in the water and never did find his wife's body. Very evil people. There are so many people down in this rabbit hole that you can't really figure out who's doing what. And it's evil. Michael, you got any questions out there? Because this is pretty important stuff. And if people don't have questions, I don't know why we're talking to them. Go ahead. Hello? Anybody there? Or have I been talking to myself for this last hour?
No, I just muted myself out and I started talking and then I realized that I wasn't talking.
Blessed are those that can't be heard.
There you go. What I was saying to you was be nice to these people. They put food on your table. Now, listen, press star.
I'm being sarcastic with them, but okay, go ahead.
Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side in the middle of your monitor. Left-click inside of it and just start typing away your comment or question. Outside of it, that rectangle, you'll see a place to put your name and contact information, then hit submit. So all you got to do is press star 2, and we'll get started. If not, we're going to have an early evening tonight. That's not fun.
But, Michael, you're sure open to ask a question.
Well, I'm just so excited about being able to differentiate between a union state citizen. That's the words that the IRS uses when they refer to us as a union. It's an uppercase U, lower, the rest lowercase, union, and state is all lowercase, and citizen is uppercase. Union state citizens, that's how they refer to us. And, as opposed to United States citizens. And you can find this on your W8BEN, B-E-N. Go to the first block. And then go all the way to the end of what you have to select as your reason for doing it, and it'll tell you right there. It'll say union state citizen. So we start with Ed, and then we go to Johnny Ringo. Go ahead, Ed.
All right. So after we're done with
let me make a quick comment before I forget. I've been looking at that Ben document for 5 years, and I never noticed that, Michael. Now that you guys start preaching the truth about union state citizen and the proper right way to write the emphasis on the first letter in the word, it just makes so much sense to me. It's just absolutely compliant to the Constitution and the Articles of Confederation and so forth. Okay, go ahead.
Well, here's the food of it all. Except for 8 years of my life, I've been my own man. I create business and that's how I make my money. First as a jeweler, and that was for, almost 30 years, and then doing what I do here, retire. I retired in 2002, 2003, and I got bored real quick, so I started, doing this. The point being is that I never had, when I hired somebody, I would just send them down to my CPA, and the CPA would sit across from them and get all the paperwork filled out, or one of their accountants that they had. And I never saw this stuff. Not that I would recognize it for what it was then. I would have no concept of it. But today, it was just 2 weeks ago. We had issue with one of Bernie's students where they needed the W-8 filled out for their issues. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it and I'm going, OMG, look at that. I just got excited. I almost, emptied my bladder. I was so excited when I saw that because I recognized it instantly. It says Union State Citizen. And there it was, black and white. So
isn't it amazing, Michael? how you can look at something for years and years and years and it just doesn't jump out at you. It's kind of like reading the Bible. You read it for 30 years and all of a sudden something jumps out of you and go, how did I miss that all those years?
Yeah. But I never looked at this before because I never had the occasion to look at a W-9 or W-8. I never worked for anybody, you know, before. And, you know, I went to work for Zales when I was 16. So I that's more than half a century ago, guys. Anyways, Ed, back to you. Sorry for taking up your time. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi. So after we're done with status correction,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be able to sue the federal government for throwing me in jail for income tax evasion.
I think that that's definitely something to look at. Absolutely. There should if you consider the fact that everything under the Federal Code of Regulations is for federal citizens, and you're not one. You never have been one.
Right.
And that's the other thing. You're not changing the record. I have so many people in their innocence and ignorance, meaning lack of knowledge, they'll say, I want to change my status. And I'll go, well, so you're saying to me it was right to begin with 20, 30 years ago? Well, no, it's never been right. So you're not changing your status. You're correcting your status. The change is only a byproduct of it. You're there to correct. So if you're correcting your status, that's ab initio. From the point of the beginning is what this was. And the government has to correct their record nunc pro tunc. They have to go back and rechange everything that they've done. So, yes. I would say, just like if you have a void judgment that comes up with a criminal case that somebody served their time in 20 years ago, and they served 8 years or whatever, and is now void because of whatever reasons it's been made void in the violation of that person's due process, that person then has a right to go back and collect $3,500 a day, I think, is the average for 8 years. Back to you.
Well, the way to look at it, let's just say that you are fishing. Okay, you're fishing on a body of water between Canada and America, okay? And America Coast Guard pulls up to you and gives you a $1,000 ticket. And you go, oh, my gosh, because I forgot to have a whistle on my boat, I get a $1,000 ticket or whatever. You know, they're bogus money racket. So you, instead of fighting it, you... And let's say you did fight it, but you lost, and you paid the $1,000. And then, you know, 100 years later, your grandson finds out that, hey, he was fishing on the Canadian side, and they don't require a whistle on their boat. Anyway, they didn't prosecute him. He can go, if he has fact evidence of where you were grabbed and given that ticket, that's called a subject matter jurisdiction challenge. He's challenging subject matter jurisdiction means the moving party, the United States, has to come in and prove the elements of the crime. So they have to prove territorial jurisdiction. So if they didn't have territorial jurisdiction, they had no business applying the written law to you and charging you with a to the extent of a citation to pay a fine. So that case would be thrown out and you'd go after damages. Now the beauty of it is the U.S. judge doesn't get to determine damages. The American people get to determine damages. If the U.S. judge gets to determine damages, he goes, well, here, we'll buy you a beer and we'll all be good. Yeah, the subject matter jurisdiction can be challenged at any time. Now, subject matter jurisdiction is extremely broad because there's many ways that the United States has the ability to prove up jurisdiction. Sometimes it's contractual. Sometimes it's you threw a rock at one of their buildings when you're standing across the street. Sometimes it's territorial. Lots of different things. But anyway, they have to produce it. In that situation where you're fishing on the Canadian side, they just simply have to prove that you were fishing on the land of the American side where the written law that they enforced had forced them. They have to prove it. You don't have to prove that you are not in the American soil, American land. They have to prove that you were. So just remember, subject matter jurisdiction is declaring the law. You declare the law to the activity. You declare the law to the person, which is like a franchisee, a corporation, a legal entity. And you declare the law to the activity and the land.
Would I be able to bring civil charges to each actor and judge in the case?
If you can convince the majority of a jury it ain't right, and they and you should be paid this amount of money, that's what you'll get.
Okay.
So, I don't know. They're going to claim statutes of limitations. You can't do that. We got official immunity. You can't do that because I'm a judge. You can't do that because I was employed by the United States. You can't do it. You know, blah blah blah. Blah. Until just nauseating all the excuses they got to not be responsible for their corruption, their illegal acts.
Trevor.
Yeah, there's
but the
case law that. Go ahead.
But the fact is, it's unconstitutional for them to take official judicial immunity. It's unconstitutional. It's unbiblical. They can't do it.
Violation of oath.
Say that again?
It's a violation of the oath.
Well, it's a violation of God's law.
Yeah.
And the jury probably not going to buy it. Now, they got the jury so buffaloed in their courts. The judge will actually, in the federal courts, the judge will come out and say, oh, you got to ignore that evidence. You can't put any weight in that evidence. And this other evidence that he wants to bring forward, we're not going to allow him to bring that forward. Baloney. If you got any guts at all, any backbone, and you're on a federal jury, you don't say nothing, but when it gets back into the jury room all by yourself, you just say, hey, that judge is full of blankety blank blank. You guys are the jury. Why don't you show this judge that you are the jury and you rule on your conscience and forget about what he said or she said. I had a friend that was in court and the judge says, oh, you can't receive that evidence. And you've got to release this man because they don't have sufficient evidence to convict him. And he went back into the chambers with the other people and he talked to them and he told them about the power of the jury and how they can ignore the prosecutor and every other person in the world and they can vote independently with no risk of any liability except to God, which is pretty big risk. You better be right with God. And those judges, that jury convicted that guy unanimously, even though the judge says you can't do that. So that judge is up there blowing smoke. Go ahead, Michael.
Share with you two cases. This is Charrier versus Rhodes. It's 1974. You can find it at 416 U.S. 232. Quote, U.S. Supreme Court held that state officials acting by, quote, color of law, end quote, may be held personally liable for the injuries or torts they cause and that official or sovereign immunity may not be asserted. And then also in Warnock versus Pecos County, Texas, at 116 F3rd 776, this is a 1997 case. Quote, when a state officer acting under a state law in a manner violative of the federal constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that constitution. And he is, in that case, stripped of his official or representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequences of his individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. End quote. Bada boom.
There was a guy in Canada that was really good about putting government officers in their position up there. He'd ask them a question, and then they would try to tell him to do something, and they show up on his land, municipal codes or whatever. And he says, "Are you willing to sign a document in your personal commercial liability that you're giving me an official order?" And they would just walk away. They knew they didn't want to do that because now if they did have something that was absolutely supported in law, yeah, I have no problem with that. But when they don't, when they go back to the lawyer and say, "Hey, this guy wants us to sign this document," and it says here that if I'm wrong, I'm going to have to pay out of my own pocket. And Mr. Lawyer, what do you got for me? And the lawyer will say, nothing. Heck, I'm not going to go out there and enforce this municipal code against this guy because you can't even produce any evidence that I have authority to do it. And I've had a great many municipal court cases where the argument in the courtroom was, does the moving party, the state, city, county, have evidence that the written law that they're bringing forth, the municipal code, has force and effect in the subject land? That's it. And if it dealt with a warrant where I was arrested under that municipal code, which I was many times, the head prosecutors resigned from their job. Resigned from their job. One guy was there 19 years, the head prosecutor making big, big bucks, and the guy underneath him making pretty darn good money, both resigned, and the sheriff told me that they resigned because of my jurisdictional challenges on the record. Once you make a proper jurisdictional challenge on the record, they can't say they didn't know if they start doing this to you again or somebody else, and that's why they resigned from their job. Go ahead, Michael.
Ed, anything else, Ed, or we're going to go to Johnny Ringo?
No, I'm done.
All right. Thank you so much. Great questions. Appreciate you. Johnny Ringo, take the front stand.
Well, I just got a little information here.
Sure.
You were talking about fiat money. And anyways, the Federal Reserve Act, which was signed by Woodrow Wilson on December 24th, 1912, is a false statute because there was absolutely no quorum in either house at the time the bill was introduced and passed. And the banks paid off Woodrow Wilson to sign this bill when there was no quorum in either house because they were all out on Christmas vacation. So your Federal Reserve Act is a big bunch of bullshit.
And I've been notified recently that if it was passed properly, let's just hypothetically say it was passed properly, it has expired and it has not been renewed. That Federal Reserve Act only had a time limit on it, and that thing expired in, I can't remember what year he said, 2013 or something like that. And he said if lawyers bring it up, if it's 100 years, yeah, it's expired in 2012. The lawyers can be killed. They'll be killed. They'll be killed for bringing this up and airing it. Go ahead.
Well, as far as the gentleman that was before me, if he would like to take the federal government to court, my recommendation would be, I hope he's a multimillionaire, because no one in the last 30 years has actually won in the federal court. And if he does, I would recommend the RICO Act, because there were several agencies involved in sending him to prison. I deal exclusively in federal law, And my recommendation would be he would only be wasting his money unless he wants self-satisfaction, but he will not, I repeat, will not get it in federal court.
Well, we disagree with that. I actually work with an individual that has won several cases in federal court, but they've all been sealed. So you're correct. As far as the public knows, nobody's won, or very few have won, but they're sealed cases. So, and we don't have to, we don't, this is a common law jurisdictional challenge. We can take it before the people. If they want to push us into a corner, okay, we'll take it to a common law jurisdiction court. And they don't want that. So, but anyway, that's above my pay scale. There's other people in our group that are experts at that, and that's where they come in. If I claim I'm an expert at a lot, an awful lot of things, I'm probably not an expert at nothing. So, go ahead, Michael.
No, I was just asking Johnny Ringo if he had any other questions or any other comments to make.
No, I don't have any. Besides, you know, the Federal Reserve Act was a joke right from the beginning, and as your man says, it has expired. But
right.
In reality, the money that you claim you have is not yours. It's printed by the federal government, and it is theirs. And it is only on loan. And everybody is under the false impression that they have money. There is no money.
No.
And
well, it's received as value in society. So that's the main thing that people are interested in.
They can do something.
If you find if you have a $100 bill laying on the ground,
public period. The only real money.
But anyway,
is gold and silver.
Yeah, but if you find a Federal Reserve note laying on the ground, $100, you can go buy a lot of hamburgers with it. It doesn't make if it's substantive money or not. People will give you a lot of hamburgers for that $100 bill. The sad part is they spin around and they print it with a push of a button, and you have to work for your 100 hamburgers, but they just spin around and push a button and they get their 100 hamburgers for nothing, practically nothing, just pennies, and that's unbiblical. God hates that. It's called theft. It's the biggest scam in the history of the world. And they bring it forward like, oh, man, do we have a deal for you? We can help you. And really what they did is they helped government, so-called government leaders, get in a position to where they can take wealth from the society and spend it at will. That's what it really does. That's really what they love about that thing. And then the people that are behind it, that are getting interest off all the money in circulation, they're getting that 1.5%, 2.5% interest on it, on trillions and trillions of dollars. They are the ones that own these mansions around the world that are so big that a Learjet looks like a little dot on the ranch. And they got 50 bedrooms in them. It's just incredible wealth they have, but nobody knows who owns those buildings. And it's the we call it the Illuminati. It's the elite. They do not allow their names to be exposed. But anyway, it's God hates it. He hates it. Go ahead, Michael.
No, that's it for the night for me. Anybody else have any comments or questions? We'll take them now, or wish you all well and talk to you next week. Let me check Freedom's Radio real quick. No, not there. Johnny Ringo, I thank you so very much for joining us this evening. You are a treasure, and we appreciate you. Ed, your comments as well, and others, I thank you. Until next week, good night, everybody, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.